Thank you very much. If it should happen to you that you have some free time here and walk around at the shoreline and maybe scratch with your foot in the sediment, you will see that you will the appearance of some blackish material just beyond the surface of the sediment, and this is due to sulfurous and iron-containing material, which contributes to a significant extent to many intertidal soils. These materials are reduced, they're sulfide, sulfur, and ferrous iron, and are important for the mobility of nutrients such as phosphorus and toxic elements such as heavy metals. The speciation and the biogeochemistry of sulfur and iron are dependent on redox potential, which means that particularly reduced inorganic sulfur and iron species are labile, which has consequences for the sampling, transport, and preparation issues like we heard yesterday by Dr. Amhorst. The tidal dynamics results in a periodic change in duration, about 6 hours change, and thus it's interesting whether the kinetics of sulfur and iron oxidation reacts to this tidal dynamics. And therefore, it's important to know the kinetics of sulfur and iron oxidation during exposure to atmospheric oxygen. And this also is interesting to know about the sensitivity of reduced sulfur and iron to aerobic sampling and transport. It's also interesting whether the oxidation kinetics is dependent on soil type, texture, organic carbon, or sulfur species. And it's also interesting to know the role of abiotic versus biotic oxidation reactions. To study this, we sampled 4 intertidal soils in Germany and Thailand. We performed anoxic sampling to be on the safe side and also made sure that transport and sample preparation was completely anoxic, which is not quite simple. Then we started a laboratory experiment and where we exposed field mice samples to atmospheric oxygen at room temperature for different time intervals, ranging from 1 minute up to 21 days. And abiotic oxidation was studied by treating some replicates with sodium azide, which prevents microbial changes. After different times of exposure, we recovered the samples and did analysis of sulfur and iron speciation by Zanes, citrulline-based Zanes. The study sites are very different. We had 4 sites from Germany, different in texture, the Sandwatt, the name says it's a sandy texture. This is an intermediate texture, sandy low, Mischwatt, and the Schlickwatt is a clay texture. Also, the carbon content increases from the Sandwatt to the Schlickwatt, and also the inorganic carbon content. And the Thailand soil was reclaimed from that lagoon here, and it is much lower in carbon and much richer in, much lower in organic carbon, much richer in calcium carbonate. Sampling was not an easy job, as you might know. It is sticky, it is smelly, and you always have to ensure anaerobic conditions. But we were successful in taking these cores for getting an impression about the vertical changes of sulfur and iron speciation. Also, we collected the material from the uppermost 8 centimeters of the sediment to get stuff for our incubation experiment. This stuff was treated and transported in dry ice to prevent mineralization during transport and oxidation during transport. Then the samples were further processed in a glove box. We homogenized the samples and put out the different replicates for different treatments in the glove box. And after the experiment has been conducted, we went to the synchrotron in Thailand. We had to prepare the sample for X-ray spectroscopy in a glove bag to ensure that there is no oxidation. And finally, we could measure the sulfur and iron species by Xanes. How does Xanes function? You apply X-rays with a different energy to the sample and look to the absorption patterns. And you see here for sulfur, the spectra changes with increasing sulfur oxidation state. There's a strict relationship between the position of this main peak called white line and the sulfur oxidation state. And in addition, you can use other patterns of the spectra of different sulfur species to perform linear combination fitting on unknown samples. The same applies for iron. The iron spectra of ferrous iron are different from those of ferric iron. Unfortunately, it's hard to differentiate among different iron sulfides. They have almost the same spectra. You have to do EXAFs or different techniques to distinguish among these three. And the same applies for different iron oxyhydroxides. You cannot really tell which of these iron hydroxide you have just on the KH-Zane spectrum. Well, coming to the results, the initial state of the different samples, you see here we distinguished inorganic sulfide, elemental sulfur, thiol, which means organic reduced sulfur, and intermediate organic compounds and final sulfate. And because these four are somewhat hard to be discriminated and quantified, they are often united in the so-called reduced sulfur fraction, whereas this is the oxidized sulfur fraction. For our four soils, we see that there are differences. If you look at only the uppermost 8 centimeters, which are of interest for our incubation experiments, we already have heard that there's differences in organic carbon and texture. Texture changes to finer grains from left to right, and organic carbon content increases. And also the sulfur speciation changes. Pyrite decreases from left to right. Increases from left to right, whereas iron monosulfide and sulfate decrease. Looking to the results of the incubation experiment, if you take the spectra of the clay Schlickwald sample, you see the spectra changes during exposure with oxygen from 1 minute up to 21 days. The left peak decreases in size, whereas the right peak increases, which means that sulfide is converted into sulfate. And there's more than that happening. We just cannot reveal it with the naked eye, but if we conduct linear combination fitting, it will be visible. But already by looking at it, the spectra with the naked eye, we see there's a change. If we compare it with the abiotic variants of the same samples, we have the same change. Sulfide decreases and sulfide increases, but far less pronounced. And we also see that the major changes happen for the long-time incubation, not for the short-term incubations. If you convert the spectral information for all samples into species information, we end up with these kind of graphs. We have the exposure, and we have the percentage of different sulfur species. Yellow is oxidized, and black and blue is reduced. And we see there's a rather slow kinetics for the Schlickwald, the clay soil. There happens very little during the first 12 hours. If you look at the abiotic variant, we see in the long term, the sulfur oxidation is less pronounced compared to the total, which means abiotic plus biotic variant, which means that here, particularly in the last, in the long-term exposure, the microbial oxidation gets of significant relevance. If we look at the sandy sandwat sample, we have a larger change in the short term, which means for 12 hours, than for the clay sample, whereas in the long term, there's a smaller change. Looking at the abiotic variant, we have a larger relevance than for the clay soil, so, which means here in the sandy soil, abiotic processes obviously play a larger role. Looking at the tropical soil, we see it starts with a far lesser extent of reduced sulfur species, and we have also a larger change within 12 hours. There's considerable sulfur oxidation, which continues up to the very end. And the abiotic sulfur oxidation decreases in relevance with time. If you compare all four soils, looking at the percentage of reduced sulfur to total sulfur, we see that the tropical soil is far faster in oxidizing the reduced sulfur than the German soils. And for the German soils, we have a sequence from the coarse grain to the fine grain soils. On the long run, the tropical soil is still on the lead, but the three German soils change position. On the long run, the more clay soil has a faster oxidation kinetics than the more sandy soil. Comparing the four soils at three different times, short, intermediate, and long term, we see if you look at the oxidized fraction of initial reduced sulfur, we see within 10 minutes nothing, little really happens. About 10% are only oxidized or almost nothing. In the intermediate time, we have between 10 to 35% oxidation. And this might be dependent on texture, on iron sulfide, iron monosulfide concentration. As we know that iron monosulfide is supposed to be reacting rather quickly, and the iron monosulfide content increases from the clay soil to the sandy soils. On the long run, we have 40 to 65% oxidation within 2 weeks. And for the German soils, there might be a function of the pyrite content, which is supposed to be a more, let's say, slowly reacting sulfide mineral. However, the tropical soil is on the lead all the time. And if you look at the contribution of microbial sulfur oxidation to total sulfur oxidation, we see with in the first 10 minutes, there's only abiotic sulfur oxidation. Then microbes need, obviously, they need some time to get up and then start their reaction. We have a maximum contribution of microbial oxidation between 25 or 40 to 80% of total sulfur oxidation at 12 hours. And on the long run, the microbial contribution gets down again to 20 to 30%. If we, at the end, look at the iron, it's not a really interesting story. Nothing really happens so much. Interesting is that we have already at the beginning about two-thirds ferric iron, oxyhydroxide iron, and only one-third reduced iron. And commonly it's believed that oxidized iron and reduced sulfur cannot coexist together, but there's considerable heterogeneity. If you look at the sample, there are earthworms already always mixing surface stuff into the uppermost 8-centimeter zone, and this heterogeneity has been destroyed in our design because we homogenized the samples. Looking at the changes, nothing really happens at the sandy soil. The contribution of ferric iron remains all the same, and the same applies for the abiotic variant. Looking at the clay soil, there is some slight decrease of reduced iron from about 30 to 25%, and some slight increase of the oxyhydroxide iron, which obviously seems to be mainly abiotic, according to the data. Coming to the end, in summary, reduced sulfide sulfur dominates in all intertidal soils. Iron is about two-thirds ferric and one-third ferrous. With increasing clay content in the intertidal sediment, we have an increasing percentage of reduced sulfur compounds. We have a slow oxidation of reduced sulfur, which is far longer than this tidal period of 6 hours. Nothing really happens, or only little happens within 10 minutes. And we obviously have a different oxidation kinetics for different soils, and this is potentially due to different iron monosulfide pyrite contents, maybe also elemental sulfur and microbial communities play a role. And the changes of iron speciation are insignificant or very slow. Thank you very much for your attention. I'm happy to take questions.
For preserving the abiotic component, because I'm a little surprised that the abiotic component was as large a portion of the total as you reported.
Yeah, I was surprised either in the beginning, and maybe this has to do with the fact that we conserved our samples in dry ice, which meant that the samples were frozen. We allowed them to equilibrate some time before we started the incubation experiment, but this was maybe too short. It was about 24 hours, which were allowed for equilibration. Maybe in the future we should try to maintain the temperature of the sample just above 0 degrees to prevent freezing. And then maybe in these future studies we will end up in a larger contribution of biotic sulfur oxidation. But in the beginning we thought that 24 hours would be enough for the microbes to, let's say, recover from the freezing process. Well, that's what you wanted to know?
Yes, and how did you prevent microbial oxidation? What was your methodology for preserving or preventing microbial activity?
Just by freezing them down just after sampling to minus 70 degrees Celsius, keeping them in dry ice until we started the experiment, which meant we had 24 hours in the glove box without oxygen to get them into life again.
Did